Cord, thank you very much.
Yeah, that's very ominous, you know.
Yes. Well, you know, so far this is the end of my second week of doing the show, and so far so good. You know, I've noticed I get to look at analytics every morning. Podomatic does a really good job with a pie chart, and they give me a breakdown on numbers of visits and downloads and embeds and all this other data. They even show me a map of the world, and I can see which countries I'm getting following. And I seem to be having a bit of an uptick in two places which are not expected. The first one is Apple, the Apple podcast, iTunes. I'm getting some traction over there. I don't know what's going on.
Good.
But people are picking up on the show, and I'm trying to strategize in terms of ways I can further develop it over there. And then the second place is Ghana.
Really?
Yeah, the Nation of Ghana has a podcast site that's carrying my show, and I'm developing a following in Ghana.
What made you think of that?
Well, I collect podcast sites like some people collect stamps and coins. I mean, I'm looking all the time for other platforms, and they're all free too. It's amazing. The only one I actually pay for is Podomatic. That's like the mothership for podcasts.
Right.
And that's a once a year subscription. It's not super expensive. And they automatically send them out to iHeartRadio, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher.
Wow.
And all these other lesser known ones. So, you know, plus they live stream the show. So it's a pretty good service. And of course, Rumble is the flagship station. So far, so good. They haven't censored me. I mean, I've discussed pretty much whatever I've wanted to talk about. No problem.
Well, here's the thing that I found with that Substack.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, you get stuff out on enough platforms and people find you.
That's how I figure. I mean, I think the thing is consistency. I'm doing the show every night around the same time, even though I'm a little early tonight. But, you know, generally speaking, and I promote it the same way. I send it out to the same social networks. People who come to my program as guests, they assumedly put it out on their social networks. And gradually, you know, it's mainly a word of mouth, because I'm not going to get any algorithm. You know, that's clear. I mean, the big tech is not going to do that. That's one of the things they've shut down. So I'm doing an end run around it by getting all these, these other sites and the word of mouth. Now, Substack, I've now opened an account there.
Oh, good for you.
And I'm posting blogs there. I mean, obviously, I'm always trying to figure out a way to turn this thing into some kind of an income producing thing. I mean, you know.
Substack gives you the opportunity to charge for some or all of your content. And, you know, as I mentioned last week, the thing I like about it is it automatically emails the stuff out.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does a good job.
To do that separately. And there's a lot of people on Substack. No surprise, I've been following this COVID thing. And there's two or three guys that are writing about it constantly and may post 3-4 times a day.
Mm.
So,
well, you know, I'm still trying to, I mean, while I do collect these things, in many ways, I'm still pretty incompetent when it comes to the technical side of it. So with Substack, I have now figured out how to post articles, but I have not yet figured out how to set up the charge part of it. Even though I do have a Stripe account, I don't know how to connect all the dots to make it happen. So
you can actually contact them for help.
Yeah, that's what I think I'll do. And also, I think that it's a good resource to get potential guests. You say there are these guys that post every day on...
Oh, no, there's a couple of these guys like Steve Kirsch.
Mm.
I've seen him where he posted 5-6 times a day. It's smaller posts.
Right.
But he'll find stuff out.
Yeah.
And the latest thing he's doing, because he is, you know, one of these people that have been raising questions about the vaccines and so on. And what happens is a very interesting phenomenon where there are people on the other side that would just say this guy's an idiot, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
But will never debate anybody. So what he started doing was turning tables.
Mm-hmm.
And meet Dr. So-and-so. And what will inevitably happen, I mean, it's funny, it's predictable. He will get on their Twitter account and say, would you like to debate this? And he'll get blocked. And that'll be it. I mean, that's what the left does.
Right, of course. That's how they censor. And I think it's going to get worse before it gets better. I mean, I think that, maybe this is my own paranoia, admittedly. But I think that between now and Election Day for the midterms, it's going to get real ugly. It looks like the Republicans are going to win big. They're going to take back both houses of Congress in a big way. Possibly, I mean, I don't know, Steve Bannon might be a little too over-exuberant, but he thinks that the Republicans are going to take back 100 seats. I don't know about that. But, it's probably like maybe close to that, maybe 70, 80 seats. And you see Democrats across the country every day announcing they're retiring, they're leaving. So, it does look that way. And I think that because of that, there's going to be some pretty nasty stuff coming down the pike in terms of not just censorship, but you might have seen this, and maybe I'm making more out of this than I should be. I heard Jack Posobiec comment on it, and he's usually pretty good. He's got some good inside Washington contacts.
Right.
But he said, the juxtaposition of Vice President Harris's comment on the anniversary of the Capitol incursion, where she compared it to
Pearl Harbor
and 9/11, the attack on the World Trade Center,
right.
And then used the word domestic terrorists. Those were acts of war. I mean, obviously, the Pearl Harbor, 3,000 Americans lost their lives and we entered World War II. 9/11, 3,000 people lost their lives and we launched the international war against terror. So between that kind of characterization of domestic terror and this letter that was sent by the National Association of School Boards
that was solicited by the Education Department.
Yeah. Exactly. This guy Condona, which is collusion at its worst. Actually, he arranged for the letter to be sent. It was like the whole thing was an inside job. And then the text of that letter, I don't know if you've seen it, but it's been published.
Yeah.
And it's really, scary stuff, domestic terrorists, white supremacists, all this kind of charge that this letter asked the FBI, and Garland turned it over to the FBI. We can't even begin to talk about them, but he said, you have to start investigating parents. I mean, these are people who are questioning things like critical race theory, sex education, masking and the pandemic. I mean, just people getting up in school board meetings and criticizing. And the thing that apparently triggered this, they always need to have an event, right? There's a Pearl Harbor or there's something. Was this father in Virginia whose daughter had been Loudoun County, his daughter had been raped in a men's room by a guy wearing a skirt, and the school covered it up. And he got up and he got a little emotional at the meeting. And he's like, you people need to resign. This is outrageous. And he was arrested. That not only triggered the letter by saying he's a domestic terrorist, but the fact that that was videoed and the whole country saw that led to the defeat, I think, largely of McAuliffe in that special election, and it helped Youngkin because.
Well, here's the thing. Yeah. I think they're jumping the shark on this. I mean, when it came out that this guy's daughter was raped, they covered it up, they denied it, and then they had him hauled off by the cops. How is that a good look for them exactly?
It was terrible, and it was all on video. Not only that, but it turns out that this rapist was sent over to another high school where he did it again.
Right.
So, it's obviously part of an agenda to promote the trans, because if it had been just some guy, he would have been up the river in a second. But he got a big pass. And I think that that outraged any reasonable parent, and that anybody could relate to this father saying, hey,
certainly.
Of course.
Well, here's what happened too in the low, it was the coverage in the two Washington papers that I read. This kid now was labeled, even at a young age, he was only 15, as a registered sex offender.
Uh-huh.
But in keeping with the policy of the Washington Post, they didn't mention the kid's name.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But,
and they also didn't mention the trans piece of it either.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I think the trouble is, to coin a phrase, they're trying too hard. And it's getting to a point where there's no sympathy. There's going to be the raw meat people that I guess like this stuff and are finding these conspiracies everywhere and everything is white supremacy and so on. But I don't think there's a lot of people that actually believe that.
I don't either. I think it's, and the claim that the events entering the Capitol is white supremacist, there's no evidence of that at all. I mean, that's, you know, these things, they're just making it up whole cloth. But what Posobiec noted, and I think he's onto something, is the juxtaposition of these two things, Harris's comments about comparing this to 9/11, and the letter, which apparently they are now going forward with, even though, you know, Garland denied it, and you know, he has some major conflicts of interest with his son-in-law and all that, and his wife, putting that aside. The point is that they're going forward and they are criminalizing anyone who is a Trump supporter. And that includes 75 million plus people. It includes me. It includes you, I assume.
How is that a good strategy?
Because they are losing. They have an illegitimate, they're holding power illegitimately. They're losing that power. They didn't really win. And now they're going to try to take possibly very strong measures to see if they can hold on to that power. Now, that can, you know, I don't even, God forbid, want to look at some of the things that might happen between now and election day. But if the last election is any indication, they're going to look for some kind of an excuse to paper the House with absentee ballots like they did last time. Millions of unsolicited absentee ballots with no chain of custody sent out in all of the, I think in most states. I mean, here in Massachusetts, apparently, I now know it happened, even though this state is pretty conservative comparatively. But, you know, there'll be something that might happen, and that could be another pandemic. It could be another scare. I've been hearing news coming out of China that there's some kind of a hemorrhagic disease that they're locking down whole cities over. You know, it's either going to be that, or it might be some kind of a violent terrorist type incident involving people who are allegedly, you know, Trump supporters, and that's going to cause
How do they think that's going to go over? You know,
I think that they're just desperate, and they're going to try to use an excuse, maybe to suspend the election. I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, they these are people who are, you know, look what they did during the 2020 election. I mean, they're going to do whatever they have to do to cling to power. They've got huge money. They're doing a lot of fundraising with the big tech people over in, you know, Silicon Valley, and Zuckerberg, who wrote a check for $420 million, him and his wife, a private check out of their bank account to finance these phony turf groups who basically went around stuffing the ballot boxes. And going in and, you know, gathering ballots in nursing homes. And
what's Zuckerberg's dog in that fight? Okay,
I don't know. He obviously had something going on because he wanted to take out Trump. And he gave like $6 million to that corrupt Secretary of State in Georgia, Raffensperger, who then said, oh, I didn't even know about this. And you know, I mean, he's spreading him in that famous Hungarian billionaire. We know who I'm talking about.
Yes, of course.
They're spreading money around like manure. I mean, it's it's big money, and they're basically, they've bought the election. This is what, of course, the left used to talk about and complain about. I wonder if Tom Hartman is talking about this now. He spent months talking about this in elections past, how the rich corporate Republicans, you know, now it's like the shoe's on the other foot. But so.
Well, to tell the truth, the shoe's been on the other foot for a long time.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I just want, you know, I hate to think about what they're capable of. That's all. I mean, it's, you know, especially as it's becoming more apparent that they are sinking. I mean,
well, I'm more positive. I mean, the Supreme Court throwing out that vaccine mandate.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Was very positive. They could have gone farther, but that's another matter. I think the tide is turning. And I believe this, well, it's not a pandemic anymore. At best, it's endemic. They're trying to get people excited. But again, that's blowing up also. They're telling people you get tested. There aren't enough facilities for people to get tested. The PCR tests have officially been thrown out by the CDC, although they're widely still used.
Right.
I think that this particular situation is beginning to fall apart. And indeed, you gave me the inspiration to write that latest piece on whatever happened to liberals.
I know, I saw that. I mean, well, you know, I get all my ideas from doing the show too, so, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's like they're really having a major. I mean, look, Biden's the latest opinion poll out of not Rasmussen, which is a conservative, but this was out of Quinnipiac, which is a liberal. Yeah. He's like, what is it, 30%? I mean, his ratings are lower than Nixon was as he got on the helicopter, you know, when he after resigning. I mean, it's, I don't think that it's unprecedented in terms of low ratings at this early in a presidency. And Harris is even worse. She went up, gave that ridiculous speech. They can't seem to do anything with her. And meanwhile, the Build Back Better is dead. The attempt to codify election stealing is dead. The attempt to end the filibuster is dead.
Well, it's doubly dead because the Democrats used it to stop that sanctioning of Russia.
Oh, they've used it hundreds of times under Trump. And then he goes to...
No, I mean, it was like yesterday.
Oh, did they?
Yes. So are we going to kill the filibuster? Oh, whoop, we have to use it right now. And it's pathetic.
And then Biden goes down to Atlanta and gives that offensive speech comparing anybody who wants to keep the filibuster to Jefferson Davis. And Stacey Abrams, who's running for governor there, didn't even show up because she doesn't want to be on the stage with him.
Yeah.
She was running for governor. She wants to win.
Well, you know? Tell me this. Okay. They say that there's some puppets, that Biden's a puppet. There's people behind him. But if the people behind him are stupid enough to give him that speech to write, to read, I mean, what the hell? There seems to be no actual talent on that side.
It's horrible. I mean, they've got Jake Sullivan, the ultimate pencil neck geek. He's, by the way, deeply involved in some of the Trump Russia stuff. Yeah. Apparently, there might be an indictment. He's the mastermind behind the Afghanistan debacle. They left like hundreds of billions of dollars of military materiel at that base, and they abandoned it. I mean, probably one of the worst.
As the joke went, apparently we gave $100 million to the Taliban, and Robert O'Neill put on Twitter, well, you know, they needed it to maintain all that equipment we left them.
Yeah, right. Oh, I mean, it's probably in the annals of military history, one of the worst blunders, one of the stupidest maneuvers.
It qualifies more as the annals, I think.
The annals of history, yeah. And you know, so you see they're all trying to blame each other. I mean, Biden is trying to blame the military brass. The military brass is blaming the State Department. The State Department's blaming everybody. I didn't know about this. I knew nothing.
Right.
So, yeah, it's a complete disaster.
Well, it really is. The depressing part is you look at who the leadership is in all these countries. I mean, good grief. You have Biden. You have Trudeau. You have Macron. Yeah. Boris Johnson. I mean, where do they get all these people?
They're all just a bunch of stooges for for Klaus Schwab, in my opinion. I mean, it's, you know, right? I mean, this is all the big reset. This is, you know, the World Economic Forum. They're not loyal to their respective countries. That's why they hated Trump so much. He was a patriot. He wanted to make his put his nation first. When he went to Europe, his main message to the G7 was, I'm putting America first. You should put your nations first. And they just they didn't relate to that. They don't understand that. And you know, it's part of this kind of, you know, national borders are a superstition and old fashioned and anachronism that we have to get rid of gradually.
Well, do you think what happened there was after all these endless wars that occurred in Europe, that it just went the other way? So they eliminated ethnic or national rivalries, and the whole idea with the EU just erased all that, despite the fact that obviously the French and Germans still hate each other, but somehow it's papered over.
Right.
And I guess that only comes to where they gelded everybody, and Klaus Schwab now wants to be the head gelding or something, or, you know, what's being reset here exactly? That we're all,
you know, I'm just beginning to study it. It's something I'm going to get into big time, I think, this year. But apparently he has a book called in which he makes reference to the Fourth American Revolution, this idea that the new age is going to involve like a cyber humanity. You know, like a cyborg. Yeah, that's right. I mean, there's a term for it. What is it? Electro erectus or homo electron or something. Yeah, they actually have a term for it. I mean, the new kind of man. And, you know, it's a combination of human and computer. And
who the hell would want to go for that?
They are moving forward with it at breakneck speed. You've got billions of dollars. You've got high-tech companies developing chips. People, you know, they say, oh, well, Alex Jones was talking about this 2 years ago, and he's just some nut. Yeah, pretty much everything he said is turning out to be true.
Yeah.
Elon Musk is developing a brain chip. Now, he might be a cool guy, and, you know, he has a great image, and he does some interesting things, but he's into this thing big time. I mean, this is you know, a major effort, and there are already people lining up for it. They're being conditioned for it. Like, oh, you know, this is... you know, I mean, we have to realize that this is going to happen. I mean, this is, you know, who would have thought 2 years ago that we would have had these kinds of lockdowns and masks? Mike, you used to listen to me when I was on the American Freedom Network, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Back in like in 1999, 2000. And I remember back then, there were several authors who came on with me talking about that there's going to be a biological weapon released out of a laboratory. They didn't know it was going to be in China. They thought it was going to be Fort Detrick, but they were talking about this sort of thing and they describing what would happen in the world. And I remember at the time I was like, you know, this is probably true and I believe them, but I found the subject to be so depressing and so like overwhelming that I just didn't want to go there at the time. You know, here I am, I have a new baby. I want to have a future. I want to think about, I can't talk about things day after day that are so grim.
But it's one thing for a separate entity to release an engineered virus. But if you compare that to voluntarily wanting to get an implant.
People are going to do it. I think there's already a group of Swedes who are doing it, and there's all these promises of it.
And they don't think there could be any sinister motive at all.
I guess not. I mean, they think it's going to give them super intelligence. They think it's going to give them super health because it monitors all of your systems in your body and it reads it out, and you can then take care of it. And they think it's moving man toward this Ubermensch, you know, where you have super strength and ultimately cosmic consciousness. It's very religious. You have to realize this thing is very much part of the new age, you know, cosmic, you know, the Atlantis type of stuff. And people are believers in this. I think that they're introducing it carefully. One of the pieces of propaganda that I see popping up that seems to be conditioning people for this is the idea that, well, we already have the smartphone and that does everything for us now. Why not just implant it under your skin? Then you don't have to worry about it. And I've actually heard people say this. I mean, this is, you know, I'm telling you, it's coming. And it's going to be something that divides us in a way and marginalizes, just like they're doing now to people who don't get the vaccine. They're setting up in Washington State, they're talking about concentration camps for people and demanding that you, even here in Boston, I think starting next week, you're going to have to show papers to get into a restaurant or a gym. I mean, what is this, freaking Nazi Germany? My papers, please. I'm not giving anyone any papers.
Well, I mean, what is amusing about this is that the more the vaccines are disproven, I mean,
exactly.
The more they're doubling and tripling down on this, which again, the good news of that is they're just trying too hard. You know, you got to give it a rest on the vaccines. You got to give it a rest on the January 6th terrorism. Because
and I don't think it worked for them either. I think everybody just turned it out. It was so obviously something you'd see in like a Soviet media event, you know, and they're praying and bowing and scraping and jumping and doing and looking, you know, putting on kinky cloth. I mean, give me I just don't think anybody bought that. I really don't. And you got Pelosi there with, you know, the face looks like it's a piece of plastic, and talk about a vicious individual. Oh my God. I mean, it's unbelievable that they would try to pull that off.
I think that part of her problem now is that, and I'm just making this up, but
of course
she's 80 something years old. Can she, in her heart of hearts, look back at her life and think that, you know, she did the right thing? I mean,
she's openly corrupt. I mean, she's bragging about, she was asked about how is her husband's cashing in all the stock in companies with it, where she has advanced knowledge. She goes, oh, that's not a problem. No. I mean, you know, I think she's one of the richest people in Congress because of this. And then she has the audacity to tear up President Trump's State of the Union address. What is that all about? What is she?
She's just walking around with a lot of anger. But most people that are full of anger, it's because they hate themselves.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And, you know, I'm never going to feel sorry for her, but I think the trouble is that what you're seeing is a lifetime of this type of corrupt behavior. I mean, let's not forget her father was the most corrupt mayor in the history of Baltimore, and that saying something, believe me.
Plus, I think
her brother was also a mayor.
And he had some issues with, I mean, I don't want to get into making accusations, but I think there was a sex crime involved. I don't know.
It very likely could have been, but there's a lot of financial stuff involved. But Nancy D'Alessandro was working on this stuff as a teenager.
Yeah, she's been
going around collecting bribes and whatnot. So
there's not a lot of moral center there. And, you know, in a way, this is classically what all these people are like. With Fauci, we talked about. They're people who are morally neutral. Let's just put it that way. They're amoral. I mean, historically, I would point to an example of this being Alger Hiss. I've studied the Hiss trial.
Yeah,
they're Eastern Seaboard liberals, highly, accomplished, very privileged, very wealthy, never really had to do anything to get their hands dirty in their whole life. And they just believe that they have like a messianic complex. They somehow believe that they're above the normal functions of the rest of us. They don't have to. I mean, Bill Clinton is an example. I mean, and Hillary. I mean, they're always a step ahead of the law. Although I think in their case, they're a little bit more conscious of it. They weren't born to it. But they operate in this kind of alternative world where they somehow, they don't look within. They're not aware even. There's no self-awareness that what they're doing is hurtful and is dangerous and is corrupt. They've never looked within. They're empty. They're empty vessels.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. What finally happened to Hiss after the revelation?
He eventually was, it was, well, first of all, he was never convicted of helping Stalin, right. Even though there was enormous evidence that he was. He eventually got convicted on perjury because his testimony did not, I mean, didn't match what Whitaker Chambers was saying. And they interviewed them separately, and they kind of proved that he was lying, and everybody could hear it, and they knew it. And he eventually was convicted of perjury and perjuring himself before Congress, which is something that the left does all the time now. Yeah. That's like nothing. I mean, that's like, oh, big deal. Take a look at, the FBI. Take a look at this testimony about a January 6th the other day. I'm talking about lying before Congress.
It was so obvious she was lying. I mean,
oh, yeah. But anyway, so Hiss ended up doing about 4 years in a kind of country club prison where he had a separate apartment on the grounds. And he comes out, his wife divorces him, and then he spent the rest of his life working in some small manufacturing company. I think he was a shoe salesman or something.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, but, he didn't get, I mean, it was kind of a slap on the wrist if you think about the kind of damage that he did to this country. I mean, it's, giving top secret information to Stalin.
Well, what about the people that defended him so vociferously throughout all this?
Including Supreme Court Justice Felix Frankfurter, who actually came into the courtroom and testified to his character.
Yeah.
I mean, look, the thing is that this was one of the few events in history where somebody stood up, took on this elitist, Eastern Seaboard, deep state, whatever you want to call it, the administrative state, that being Whitaker Chambers, who took a lot of crap for it.
Oh, he certainly did.
Oh, yeah. And he stood up, he took them on, and he won. And it shocked the whole establishment. This is where Nixon got his start in Congress. You know, I've read Chambers' book, Witness. It's excellent. It's really, really good. He talks about this. Nixon, yeah, kind of an opportunist, but that's beside the point. He got into it, and this is where he made his name by taking on this case. And, I heard years later, Mona Charon, the columnist, who was a Trump hater, admittedly, but she wrote a column years later saying that the reason why Nixon eventually was taken down in the Watergate was because the left was waiting patiently. I mean, they could wait 20 years before they got revenge for what Nixon did at the Hiss trial. And that's what that was. It was payback. So that's the Hiss story.
Now, what about Mona Charon? I don't see her stuff as much.
I haven't seen her in a while. I mean, I sent her a note. I'd interviewed her years ago. She didn't get back to me. She's like part of the kind of the Lincoln Project Trump hater. Rhino, Republican, phony, Liz Cheney gang, that's, I think that's where she is. I mean, if I'm wrong, I'll stand corrected, but some of her columns they drip of this bizarre hatred of Trump because he's so mean and he's so uncivil and he doesn't talk like us and he doesn't sound like he's using the same kind of euphemisms and double talk that we're used to hearing. Instead, he uses he's a vulgarian, It's that crowd, that same group that in the case of the Lincoln Project that's involved with the pedophile scandal.
Yeah, well, but see, that's the other thing. This stream of pedophilia seems to cut through a lot of these groups.
You think so?
I don't think it's a coincidence. It seems to rear its ugly head a little too often for my taste.
Well, this was the whole thesis of the QAnon, which, I don't endorse that because I don't know who's behind it any more than I would endorse Anonymous. I like to see who's pushing these things. But when you boil it down, their whole thesis was that there is an international pedophile ring amongst elites in government, business, and Hollywood. That's it in a nutshell, and that they might be involved with some kind of satanic rituals. I mean, I have no idea if that's true or not, but I don't think it's completely implausible. And I also would note that two reporters that I think were very respectable mainstream reporters covered the subject and covered the business of the pizza, so-called Pizzagate, and they were Ben Swan and Liz Kraken, both of whom are excellent reporters, both of whom were denounced, and both of whom pretty much were destroyed career-wise over this, simply investigating and covering these topics. And so to the very way they were treated tells you there might be something going on.
Yeah, well, it certainly was true in Hollywood. It still is.
Sure.
And why should it be different in other fields of endeavor?
Yeah, I mean, it's the hubris of absolute power that people tend to exist in a parallel world. You know, they think that they don't have to be. I mean, Bill Clinton obviously is an example of it. I mean, he's there. And they like to do stuff. Part of the thrill is to do it publicly. You know, Bill Clinton got a kick out of having sex with a woman on the steps of the state house in Arkansas, according to his Secret Service handlers. You know, it was part of the excitement of doing it, like a thumbing their nose at everybody. Hey, you know, F you, I can do whatever I want. I'm king, you know, and no one's going to say anything about it because I got power, and I'll make sure that people get hurt if they report this. Somebody might even be found dead if they report this. Not to get into a theory here, but I'm just saying.
Arkansas.
Yeah, they could be Arkansas, exactly. I remember we were talking about this at the American Freedom Network when Clinton was president.
Yeah.
Ms. Sam Blumenfeld had a lot to say about that, the late Sam Blumenfeld. Do you remember him?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was very outspoken.
Oh, he was a great man. Great man. He passed away in 2016. I wish he was, I could just sometimes I think about what he'd say about different things. I mean, he was a regular of mine for probably hundreds of hours. And we were really close friends, and he would come in to the studio. He's from Boston.
Yeah.
And just a great guy. I mean, just has a shelf of books that were really, you know, very, very good, very penetrating. You know, my friend Hal Shurtleff inherited his papers and his library, and he still makes it available online through his Camp Constitution. And so you can still read Sam's books and articles. You can still hear his program with me. It's archived on my Podomatic site.
I
have Sam. And I think that Hal Shurtleff has some of my interviews with Sam also. I sometimes say, what would Sam say about this, you know, when something's happening?
Yeah, he certainly had his opinions.
He did.
But it was always interesting.
Oh, yeah. And he was very careful. I mean, he was a solid researcher. He was very dogged. He would really stay. It wasn't like the flyby media where he would cover something and move on. He would stay with that month after month. He would keep bringing it up. He'd keep looking at it. It was like a dog chasing a meat truck. You know, he didn't give up.
Wow. So how many guys are there like that now? Sort of these scholarly but dogged pursuers.
You know, it's very difficult now because of the censorship and because of the dumbing down of the country, which is Sam's main subject, was education, and he talked about that at length. I mean, there are some good podcasts out there that I listen to. I just discovered this woman, Kim Proseka, who has a podcast called the Subversive Podcast. She's doing some pretty good stuff. And she had this guy on the other day, Josiah Lippincott, who was a Marine military man who's talking about what's going on inside the military. I wanted to have him on my show, but I just looked him up and I noticed that he's been banned from Twitter. His Twitter account has been suspended and removed. So it's going to be hard to find him now. Steve Bannon does a great show. Do you listen to the War Room Pandemic?
Oh, yeah.
He's doing a great, I mean, he's got a huge, he's making a difference. He's got something like, he likes to mention he's got 125 million downloads, but he also is live on a number of venues, including one which is translated into Chinese. And he's got the Lao Beijing station. And he's really getting, he's not giving up on the election coverage. He's got Boris Epstein, who's a really good reporter, covering that. John Solomon is covering it. He's got Naomi Wolf on there, who is doing incredible talk about things like the electronic passports and what that means and the pandemic. He's got this guy, Joe Allen, who is a cutting edge researcher on the transhumanism. Great, great people. I mean, these are, you know, he's got people all over. He's got this guy's reporting from Europe. I mean, he's doing a full-fledged program the way journalists used to do it and the way they should be doing it. I mean, he's another guy that's doing great work is James O'Keefe from Project Veritas.
Oh, yes.
Oh, incredible. I mean, he started out by exposing Acorn. It led to one of my books deals with that. And it led to Acorn losing all of its contracts and going out of business, his undercover work exposing how corrupt they were. And he's still, I mean, he's exposed a lot of stuff going on with big tech. You know, he's out there and he's doing incredible work. Few other people that I can think of. I mean, Jack Posobiec does a very good job on, I listen to his quick show in the morning on human events. He gives like just a quick, like two or three.
So you're really a huge fan of these podcasts.
Podcasting is where it's at, you know, because because they're freer. You know, it's not restrained by, you know, the big tech. I mean, a lot of these guys, I mean, a guy like Steve Bannon, he was taken off of YouTube and Twitter a year ago. He's built up his own network. He's got his own platform and he's huge. You know, same thing with, Alex Jones, whom I don't necessarily like particularly. I've interviewed him a few times years ago. And yeah, I've always thought that he was a little too hot, you know, off the handle a little, you know, with some of his stuff, a bit of a grandstander. But nevertheless, he's turned out to be right on a number of issues. And he does. The what?
No, I'm saying, yes, he has.
Yeah, you bet.
Some things that were dismissed as Alex Jones conspiracy theories have very sadly come true.
Oh, yeah. Well, now the CDC is admitting that that most of the people that passed away from COVID had like four or five comorbidities, something that people like myself and others were saying 2 years ago when we were shut down for saying that.
Well, okay, but it's interesting you mentioned that. She said 75% of people that died had four comorbidities, which I immediately could see was statistical gamesmanship, right? If 75% had four, how many had three? How many had two? Okay, it's probably all of them.
Or how many people came into the hospital because they were in a car accident and they died, but they happened to have COVID?
Well, actually, I wrote about that case in Colorado where there was a murder-suicide that they listed as two COVID deaths. And people thought, including Snopes and these other fact checkers, thought that that was a myth. No, it was true. And I cited the news story. So that was, they later took it off after it had been discovered. Now, the thing was, I don't know how many deaths actually, I think it's 4 or 5% of the number that they listed were pure COVID deaths.
Right. I mean, look, I mean, in all fairness, it's safe to say that COVID might have pushed things along a little bit faster.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody had cancer or they had some terrible disease, they were obese or whatever, you know, the COVID might have put it over the edge. So I think that that's probably true. And, you know, it's a terrible disease. There's no question.
There's very few people that die of a single cause,
right?
Homicide. I mean, if someone is of reasonable age, and you do an autopsy, which isn't done that frequently, you're going to find a host of things wrong with the person. And then you can say, well, this was probably the main one. So that's
well, there were enough whistleblowers who are in the business of forensic autopsy and just an analysis at the time of death in the hospital who said, you know, we were pressured to call it a COVID death.
Oh yeah.
You know, we got money, the hospital got money for that. And you know, we sometimes when you in a situation like that, these experts have to make a judgment, and they were told it's a COVID death, and you have to certify it as such. So
well, bear in mind, the guy that wrote the book, The Cholesterol Delusion, Ernie Curtis, that I interviewed years ago, cardiologist, told me something I didn't really know at the time. He said at least half the causes of death on death certificates are wrong. Well, why? Because you're not doing an autopsy. You're coming up with something that seems likely, and you're going to put it down, and who's going to argue with it? And that's that.
So what that means is that it could be manipulated by political agendas.
Yeah.
If it's wrong. I mean, they could say, okay, well, we're pushing, we want to inflate the numbers of COVID deaths.
Right.
So you're going to have to say that. Now, I don't know, Mike, did you hear this story? And again, I heard this in fleeting. I don't know the details, but
Right. Apparently
it was either the head of Pfizer or Moderna, or it might have been Johnson & Johnson, it might have been all three, that they were ready with a vaccine in September of 2020, but they sat on it. They didn't want to release that because they thought it might help Trump.
Oh, that's absolutely true.
Is that true?
Pfizer, yeah.
It was Pfizer?
Yeah.
I mean, if the vaccine is so wonderful, then isn't that like, you know, I mean, that's like, you know, he's responsible for the numbers of people that could have gotten it quicker, but didn't because of political reasons that might have died.
Well, there's even a worse conspiracy.
What's that?
That they actually had the vaccine before
the whole virus
was officially announced.
Mm.
But no, it's absolutely true that they withheld it until after the election.
That is so, you know, I mean, it makes your blood boil. I mean, they didn't want to have Trump get credit, so they're willing to have people die. That's why the vaccine is so wonderful, of course.
Again, it's stupid because obviously he gets the credit since he was the one that.
Yeah, but he would have. I know that. But if they had announced, if Trump was able to say we now have a vaccine in September, it would have been a political boost for him and one that he would have deserved because he did accelerate the effort, and there was Operation Warp Speed. You know, regardless of what we might think of the vaccine, better or worse, the fact is that he does deserve credit for it. And they they're waiting until he's gone before they release it. I mean, that is, it's in the same category as downplaying ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, because it's not good financially for them because they can't make any money on it.
Well, the animus that corporate America has toward Trump was a little hard to understand until you realize that the president of Pfizer, CEO of Pfizer now, is not exactly the same personality that founded Pfizer, you know?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So what happens is you have a bunch of corporate drones running these places that really, in all fairness, probably would have no clue how to start a business and grow it. They simply walk into some big job because they kissed enough butt through their career and so on. Mm-hmm. So it's a whole different thing. I mean, J.P. Morgan and Jamie Dimon are not exactly the same personality.
Right. That's right. I mean, Jamie Dimon probably sits, he sits behind a computer screen. He doesn't,
yeah.
Back in the day, I mean, you know, these guys would go out and they'd see, you know, I think of like Firestone Tires. He would go down to the plant. Every other day he'd be down there talking to people who were creating the tires and finding out what's working and what isn't working, you know, actually hands-on, you know, learning the trade.
Being on the shop floor.
Yeah. I mean, now it's like, you have these people who sit in a little, you know, computer, a little booth with a computer. They don't know what the hell's going on.
Well, it's funny you say that, because that also applies to healthcare.
Oh, yeah. Well, you have now a whole industry of healthcare administration right here. Right. I think I mentioned this to you last week. And Harvard has a school of healthcare administration. It's not medical school. They're not learning. These are not even studying science at all. I mean, they're learning how to administrate. They're going to be running Obamacare. They're going to be running partners hospitals. I mean, they have nothing to, they're completely out of touch with actually people getting, you know, surgeries and getting whatnot. I mean, they don't know what the hell's going on. It's all like very abstract.
Well, it's abstract, not only between the administration and the medical personnel, it's actually abstract within the medical personnel. Because my son, who's a physician, tells a story of his friend who's a cardiologist now. And when he was doing his fellowship, he happened to spend some time in a cardiac care unit. And he noticed that these guys were just staring at monitors. And he had to remind him, no, the patient's over there. You've got to actually see the patient too.
Right.
And he relates the story that they're staring at a monitor, which doesn't look good. And they keep staring at it and staring at it. My son's friend goes over and said, this patient's dead. I mean, it.
Right. I mean, they're not actually
so disconnected. I mean, it's certainly good that you can monitor these individuals, but there's got to be a bit of the human touch.
Oh, I know. I mean, we have here in Boston, this Dr. Jerome Groopman, who's written a few books about this. He's a good man. He's he says that, you know, he's treated people. I think he's Mass General. I mean, he's treated people by, he can size someone up by looking at them and by checking out their vitals and by just spending a little time talking to them. He can tell more about what's going wrong, looking at where they are in their life, what's going on, you know, different, you know, as opposed to just, you know, doing some kind of an abstract statistic. And he's written some books about it. He's had some great cases in those books of people that he's treated. And he's a conventional doctor. I mean, he's a very well-respected doctor.
Right.
But, you know, that kind of the actual art of healing is not even on the table. I mean, it's all just statistics and abstract numbers. No one's even looking at sitting down with a person and saying, what is going on? You know, how are you? And actually taking a real look at them. They're too busy looking at the computer screen.
Well, a lot of that is they have to do all this charting to make sure they get paid. I mean, one of the biggest tragedies was the government getting involved in healthcare in the first place.
Oh, yeah.
Through sure. Medicare. Which is what essentially destroyed the system, because Medicare set up the notion of all the private insurance, the prices all went up, and the diagnostic related groups and all the evaluation boards that would decide what this procedure is worth and so on, completely screwed things up. And now you're at that particular, you're reaping the benefits, so to speak. And it's just a shame, because there really wasn't any sort of healthcare crisis, as they kept alluding to.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, in a way, a lot of that was hype, in the same way that, just to bring things back, because we're kind of reaching the end of the hour,
right.
The kind of stuff that might come down between now and, midterm election day, some of the propaganda that we might expect, especially as things aren't looking too great for the Democratic Party and for Biden, between this obvious, the putting aside the illegitimacy of the regime. I mean, the you know, the disaster in Afghanistan, the disaster with the economy, and the shortages in the supermarket. Meanwhile, you've got, you know, Buttigieg out there, former mayor of a small city in Indiana, is worried about breastfeeding. You know, there's like nothing, there's no one in charge. You've got, you know, the borders are wide open. You've got money transferred to help people be flown around the country. You've got, you know, the United States is disrespected all over the world. You know, I mean, it's like, it doesn't look great for them. So it just worries me in terms of what kind of rabbit they're going to pull out of the hat. I mean, you know, the old Trump hatred mantra isn't working. You know, they still have their devout cult followers who are going to sit there and listen to the cast of Hamilton perform a song to launch the January 6th, you know, Fed's erection concert. Did right. you see that? I thought Gateway Pundit had a funny comment. He goes, "All they
no, I heard about it."
Yeah, they just now they just need to have Liz Cheney come out and do a tap dance. I mean, it's like, you know, it's really, they've got nothing that's sticking. You know, it's just all.
And they don't seem to realize that these strategies are not working.
No. And yet they seem to be going deeper into it. It's like they're on automatic pilot. There's not a lot of introspection and saying, gee, you know, this isn't working. We better try something else.
Well, it reminds
me. It's just doubling down.
It reminds me of that particular breed of high school football coach that would. They've been losing by 30 points.
Yeah.
And they keep doing the same thing you're doing. And it's just you guys aren't executing. It certainly couldn't be the play call.
Right. I mean, there's a word for that. It's insanity.
Yes.
Do you remember the psychologist Dyer? I forget his name, but he did some books on pop psychology that I think I read back probably 20 years ago. And the takeaway was that he worked in mental hospitals. And research, you know, mental disease and insanity. And he said that one of the hallmarks of a mentally ill person is that they keep doing the same thing over and over and over, even though it's not working.
Expecting a different result.
Yeah. Well, they just, it's almost like, yeah, it becomes like, you know, and that's insanity. That's not rational. You know, that's like they've lost their marbles, basically.
Well, they have a playbook with one page.
It basically, or maybe it's because it's like we've talked about that they've never really stepped outside of their little privileged life. They just don't know how to do anything else.
That's so crazy. Nothing has really changed since the 1972 election.
Yeah.
And Nixon, of course, won in a landslide. And Pauline Kael, the New Yorker film critic at the time, said, this makes no sense to me. Makes no sense to me. I don't know anyone who voted for Richard Nixon.
Oh, yeah, exactly. She probably didn't. That's hysterical.
Yeah, I'm sure that was true. Yeah.
That's hilarious. That's really where they are.
Yeah. That was they are so sure of their position. They never talked to anybody, but now it's the equivalent of we're gonna block somebody on Twitter.
And you know something, the other media are starting to thrive. Getter is huge, especially now that Rogan has moved over there. Rumble. I mean, I feel fine not having them. I mean, it's sort of like I'm not going to invest my time and my energy into them. I'm going to build on all of these alternative stations that are popping up. I mean, if you go to my website, charlesmoskowitz.com, you're going to see about 35 alternative websites that carry this show. You know, I mean, it's really interesting. You know,
and at the same time, you probably heard CNN has lost 90% of its audience.
Oh, yeah. And same thing with MSNBC. How do they keep the light on? I mean,
well, you know, here's how they keep the light on. You have the joint cable rates. So 90 million cable subscribers, or whatever the number is, are paying X dollars a month for CNN simply being on there. Mm-hmm. It's a great business model, right? Yeah. You're getting free money. You don't have to do anything. What's going to kill them is the ratings, because you're going to have to show that you have some advertising, but 90% drop. It's become a joke. There are many, many YouTube personalities like Mark Dice, to pick one, and podcasters that routine, Joe Rogan, obviously, that get larger audiences. So
they're basically doing an end run around them. They're moving on, they're developing their own platform, and that's good. I mean, that's very positive. I feel very positive about that. There was concern about that around the time they took President Trump off of the social network. And by the way, do you know why they took, you know what the excuse was to take Trump off? It's come out recently. He sent out a tweet basically simply stating that he would not be attending the inauguration. That's all, nothing more, nothing less. This was seen as inciting violence, right? I mean, these people are criticizing, QAnon, right? Because they look at the tea leaves and every little word and here and there. This is what they're doing. I mean, they're trying to find something, some secret permutation, in something. It's really bizarre. Anyway.
And they're losing. That's a good.
God willing. So, Mike, what do you have coming up in terms of a column?
Well, I got to, I've got a couple of ideas spinning around in the head here. I've got to figure what it is. I may throw some healthcare stuff back on there. Mm-hmm. But on Substack, there's a lot of people doing a yeoman's job on COVID. I mean, how the heck can I compete with people that write four columns a day, But there's plenty of things to talk about.
Good.
So, all right. As always, it's great.
It's a great pleasure.
And speaking with you and Trump, who was pretty quiet on the show, but he's sitting right behind you. So.
I put that there to piss off the liberals. Anyway.
Good on you.
Okay. All right, Mike. Listen, thanks a lot, and I'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
All right. Take care.